Welcome to Truth GDAD Radio, new weekend slot right here on We the People Radio Network, running 2 to 4 p.m. Central Time every Saturday and Sunday. And today we're warming up for the formidable Alex Jones. That's pretty good. That's sort of like batting before Babe Ruth. I can live with that. We're going to have some great guests on today, starting with the Dean of 9/11 Studies himself, David Ray Griffin, and moving on to Jay Kolar, the contributor of perhaps the most striking article in the brand-new scholarly book, The Hidden History of 9/11, edited by Paul Zaremka, which we were discussing yesterday on this very show. Jay Kolar's article on what we now know about the alleged 9/11 hijackers is one of the most important pieces out there for anybody interested in learning about 9/11. The holes in the official story and, in fact, the complete ridiculousness of the official story. It's a terrific article. David Ray Griffin has a complimentary perspective, and today we're going to be focusing on a new DVD. At least it's new to me. It's pretty new. It's called 9/11 and Nationalist Faith, and it's available from 911TV.com. David Ray Griffin, as many of you know, is the author of The New Pearl Harbor, perhaps the most influential book on 9/11 of all of them. It's sold over 150,000 copies in its ongoing reprintings. David Ray Griffin then followed up with that book with his critique of the 9/11 Commission report. The 9/11 Commission report, Omissions and Distortions, and he went on to, he's authored, I think, six or seven books now. Getting to be so many, I can't keep track of them all. Touching on 9/11, and I think he is probably the most widely respected of 9/11 scholars. His most recent pair of books, Debunking 9/11 Debunking, which takes on the folks at Popular Mechanics and others who've tried to support the official story, and then 9/11 Contradictions, which points out the numerous contradictions in the official account. So without even bothering to bring in contradictory evidence, we can prove that the account falls apart on its own by contradicting itself. All of these are classics in the 9/11 revisionist field. Well, today we'll talk a little bit about David Griffin's specialty of theology and philosophy, which he applies in his lecture, 9/11 and Nationalist Faith. He has written on that subject in other books, including Christian Faith and the Truth Behind 9/11. So, hey, without yakking all day, let's just go ahead and bring him on. Welcome, David Ray Griffin, to Truth Jihad Radio. How are you? Hello, David? Well, he's going to be on the line here pretty quick. Let me try one more time. Welcome, David Ray Griffin. How's it going? Oh, okay. I just got word that David Ray Griffin has gone away from his phone to get some water. So we'll be with him in just a moment. In the meantime, let me talk a little bit about the video, 9/11 and Nationalist Faith. It's the recording of a lecture from late last fall in Colorado. It was October 2007. And it's yet again another tour de force, just like the one that I helped produce, which was 9/11 and the American Empire, delivered at the University of Wisconsin-Madison in spring of 2005 and broadcast nationwide by C-SPAN. I think David Ray Griffin's lectures are the best of the so-called talking head 9/11 videos, thanks in part to not only the great lectures themselves, but also the editing work of Ken Jenkins. I think I hear David back with his water. Let me see. David Ray Griffin, welcome to Truth Jihad Radio.
Glad to be back with you, Kevin.
Hey. So, you know, I recently viewed your new DVD lecture, 9/11 and Nationalist Faith, and once again, I was very, very impressed with your ability to pull it all together, and in particular, situate the fact that 9/11 has now been essentially proven beyond a reasonable doubt to have been some sort of false flag operation or inside job in a philosophical framework, and you see this as the fact that people generally, or so many Americans, just can't come to grips with this reality is symptomatic of what you call nationalist faith. Can you remind our listeners of what that is?
Yes, it's just the basic notion that our country is so good, its leaders are so good, that the idea that they would orchestrate something like 9/11 is just beyond the pale. It's not even within the bounds of reasonable discourse. I've had people, fellow theologian, excoriate me on those grounds. And, you know, apart from looking at the evidence, he said, you know, that's just irresponsible. Anytime you charge the President of the United States with killing 3,000 of his own citizens, that's irresponsible. And this is a theologian and one who specializes in theological ethics, who presumably knows something about the depths of human evil, our capacity for evil, that has been revealed throughout history. But there is this notion that's called American exceptionalism. And this was the conceit of our early people, that we were an exception to all these rules. So certainly the European leaders, they did all sorts of murder and intrigue and all sorts of things. But we had escaped from Europe in order to start a new world, a new continent, a new Israel, a city on the hill. And that has been deeply ingrained into the American psyche. So it's not only religious people, it's people who, you know, who don't have any idea of manifest destiny, that God had somehow ordained America to be the new Israel, the new church. But people you would never expect. So the other day I was listening to Jesse Ventura talking to Howard Stern. Howard Stern, of all people. And Howard said, when Jesse started talking about 9/11 being an inside job, Howard just said, well, you know, I just cannot think that, I just can't believe an American president would do such a thing.
Well, that's what my good friend and libertarian Wisconsin political comrade Ed Thompson keeps saying, even though he kind of he goes there and he looks at it and he's pretty much leaning towards our side. He kind of almost involuntarily, repeatedly has to, you know, spurt out this reflexive, I just can't believe this. I can't believe that my own, you know, our own leaders would do this. And we
it is amazing, particularly with this president and this vice president, that people have still been able to maintain this faith with regard to 9/11. They've given it up with regard to everything else. They know now, a large majority of the American people know, they lied us into Iraq. And Bulugosi's book, to prosecute President Bush for murder, that is, for the murder of Americans and Iraqis because of this war based on lies, I understand that has risen at least to number 10 on the New York Times bestseller list, even though, as Bulugosi says, his book has been blacked out by the American mainstream media, just like all of our 9/11 books have been. But that claim that George Bush is guilty and should be prosecuted for murder has now such an intuitive plausibility for such a large number of Americans that book has become a bestseller. And nevertheless, when it comes to 9/11, they draw the line and say, well, maybe he would do all those things. Maybe he would torture. Maybe he would do extraordinary rendition. Maybe he would be guilty of murder in that sense of sending these people to war where they would, certainly a large number of them were going to be killed for false pretenses. But he wouldn't do 9/11. So that's sort of the 9/11 is sort of the last holdout now, at least with regard to Bush, for this nationalist faith. And what I argued is that most people believe that the basic faith of our nation is a Christian nation. This is said all the time, because the majority of the people who profess any religious belief profess, of course, Christian belief, and they, if they belong to any organization, majority belong to a Christian organization. But I argue that that's not the deepest faith, that the still deeper faith is this what we can call nationalist faith, faith in American goodness, that we may do a lot of things incompetently, we may make a lot of mistakes. We might even do some pretty bad things, like torture. But we wouldn't do something really, really horrible. American president, as Howard Stern put it, he can't believe an American president would deliberately target his own citizens for political gain.
Well, to make that more, you know, construct a plausible narrative to explain how this particular president may have come to do this, I think it's useful to look at the neoconservative philosophy, and in particular the ideas of Leo Strauss, who was sort of the founder of it. Sometimes I've wondered, David, whether neoconservatives wouldn't have needed 9/11 if it hadn't happened to get across their point that the truth is supremely corrosive. They believe that Socrates was properly executed for telling the truth in public. They believe the truth has to be maintained among the elite, that is the neocons themselves, and everyone else should be fed a diet of big lies. And, of course, they believe that all religions are big lies. Well, now they've created the situation, David, where the truth actually is profoundly corrosive. In a sense, these people you know, who are afraid of the truth about 9/11 are right. There will be a very shocking loss of confidence in our leaders. And do you think this neoconservative philosophy may actually lie behind this act?
I think to some extent it does. And I actually did write an essay on Strauss, the Straussian philosophy. And I do accept that that interpretation that you've suggested. Of course, that's debated, but I do believe that it is the correct one. That first of all, Strauss himself was a complete atheist. He had very early on accepted Nietzsche's philosophy that God is dead. And he said Nietzsche only made one mistake. He said it out loud. He said, you don't say that out loud. You let the people keep their belief in a divine being, and you use that belief for political purposes. And I'm talking about the interpretation of Strauss by the Canadian, Shadia Drury.
Right.
They also have, you know, a version of the useful idiot, or what the Straussians, or Strauss himself called the gentlemen, the ones who may believe the rhetoric about American goodness to some extent, but are able to be manipulated by them, the more cynical ones, to say, you know, here's what we really have to do in order to increase American goodness and power around the world, because we are such a good nation. You know, we're not perfect, but we're better than everybody else. So it'd be better to have the world ruled by us than anybody else. And certainly what 9/11, the message of 9/11 is, as bad as American imperialism may be, it'd be better than having Muslims get more power in the world. And certainly in the middle, and keep their power in the Middle East, where our oil happens to be, to bring in the cynical part. And so, yeah, I do suspect that some of the people, such as Pearl and Wolfowitz, were influenced by Strauss. I doubt if George Bush ever read more than a sentence.
Right.
And I don't know about
Wolfowitz. He's probably whispering in his ear. You know, there are, for instance, the decider thing. You know, Carl Schmitt, Strauss's professor, came up with this philosophy of decisionism, where the leader is the all-powerful decider. And when Bush says, I'm the decider, and then when on the evening of 9/11, he said, oh, the Pearl Harbor of the century happened today. I mean, I could hear Wolfowitz or someone like that whispering in his ear.
That's right. I do think these guys think that way. And certainly Cheney wanted to have almost a king-like president with no limitations. And he and his chief of staff, Addington, have been the chief ones pushing for that. I don't know if Addington himself had any connection to Strauss.
Right. Well, Strauss and Schmidt, of course, are well known for that philosophy of absolute sovereignty. There must be one sovereign everywhere. Personally, I'd like to see everybody be their own sovereign of their own soul. We'll be back in a moment with David Ray Griffin, who is definitely the sovereign of his own soul, and under God, of course, in just a moment, right here on Truth Jihad Radio. So we'll be right back.
Cascadia Public Radio.
Truth Jihad Radio. I'm Kevin Barrett. I'll be on every weekend, same time, same channel, which is 2 to 4 p.m. Central right here on We the People Radio Network. It's my inaugural weekend in this new time slot. I'm warming up for Alex Jones today, and I'm celebrating my new time slot by interviewing some of the most important scholars who have been doing revisionist research on 9/11, and none of them are more important than my current guest, David Ray Griffin. David, you mentioned in your book, in your lecture, 9/11 and Nationalist Faith, that your books have not been reviewed in any mainstream newspapers. As you pointed out just now, Bugliosi's book hasn't gotten any mainstream reviews either. This is quite shocking, given that you would think that they would be able to be, you know, to make a fair amount of money by having, you know, big screaming headlines, famous theologian accuses Bush of orchestrating 9/11. But apparently the almighty dollar is not as important as the almighty imperial nationalistic faith. That's when I saw that in your lecture, it reminded me that Noam Chomsky, in his strange correspondence with me, actually claimed that the mainstream media and the publishing industry have been massively promoting 9/11 truth books at the expense of critiques of empire, responsible critiques like his. That was one of the many issues that came up that just made, threw me, in that correspondence. I don't suffer fools gladly, especially when they're geniuses and they keep repeating this sort of thing over and over. How can it be that somebody as smart as Chomsky can come up with such preposterous ideas as that, your work, for example, is being massively promoted by the media and the publishing industry?
It is amazing, but it is something we hear quite a bit from that part of the left, which is a large part of the left that disdains the 9/11 movement. They Alexander Colburn and George Monbiot in England have argued this, that we are discrediting the left, and the reason they aren't more influential is because of the 9/11 movement discrediting the left. Well, that is wrong on so many counts. It's hard to go into. I mean, one is that they're about as influential as they ever have been, long before before we arose. So they can't blame us for how uninfluential they were in the 90s. Of course, I'm using the word they as if I'm not part of them, you know. And that's the other discouraging thing, is that here we who, you know, learn so much from Chomsky and other leaders, now because we believe one thing they don't believe or don't want publicly to say they believe, they attack us as if we're not, you know, equal members, you know, as if you people are ruining the left. And another thing is that many members of the 9/11 Truth Movement are not members of the left. They're libertarians. You know, Paul Craig Roberts has been one of the biggest supporters of my books, and he was a central member of the Reagan administration, one of the chief architects of Reaganomics and so on. But these people are true conservatives who hate empire, and they see the connection. They see that 9/11 has been the factor since then that the Bush administration has used to promote empire and to promote or to dissuade any dissent from empire in this country. And somehow they refuse to make that connection. I mean, they will certainly see, certainly they've exploited 9/11, they will say. But the idea that they caused 9/11 in order to exploit it, well, there you're just discrediting the movement. Back to this issue of the nationalist faith. The reason it is so important for people to see through this is that it prevents people from looking at the evidence. They are so certain, absolutely certain, that our government couldn't have done it, that they simply will refuse to look at the evidence. So I have another DVD that I like equally well that's called 9/11, Let's Get Empirical. And so I go through in there a number of the reasons, the a priori reasons people will give why we must be wrong before they even look at the evidence. They'll say, not only our leaders wouldn't do such a thing, they'll say, well, nobody in Washington can keep a secret. If somebody had done this, somebody would have talked by now, or there would have been so many people involved in the thing, you know, setting explosives and all that. One of those would have talked, or yes, that they're too incompetent. And the same people who say our Bush administration is simply too incompetent will turn around and say, well, of course, Al-Qaeda could do it. So here you have Al-Qaeda, a little ragtag organization with no military, no inside roots into the United States and so on. And yet, and then contrast that with the U.S. military and intelligence network on which we spend roughly $1 trillion a year, and we're supposed to believe that organization wouldn't have been competent to carry out 9/11 just because we happen to have a particularly non-bright president, forgetting that Cheney is really the one who calls the shot, previous Secretary of Defense, who knows the Pentagon backwards and forwards and all the procedures. So it's just incredible. And this is another kind of faith that somehow that it's a faith that our government simply couldn't do such a thing. In any case, they'll take one or more of these things as a priori truths, and we say, well, you know, look at the evidence. How could the buildings have come down unless explosives were planted? How could the standard procedures have been canceled that day or become so ineffective unless there was a stand-down order? And they say, well, I don't know about those things. All I know is it couldn't have happened the way you said it did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very much akin to the classic cases of denial where some kind of horrible event is happening and people just are unable to come to terms with it.
Well, it is a large part of this. You know, I have my three categories of kinds of thinkers. There are paradigmatic thinkers who have a paradigm of the way the world works, in this case, the political world. And And, you know, Chomsky will give that kind of argument. Well, this just doesn't fit the way these guys do things. Secondly is the wishful and fearful thinker. We all know the idea that the wish becomes the father of the thought. Well, even more powerful of that is the fear. And so I've had people say to me, I simply refuse to believe that it was an inside job because I don't want to live in a country where the leaders would do such a thing. And, you know, that's obviously an absurd argument, and yet it influences a lot of people.
Well, I heard a version of that argument from a talk show host I tend to respect who said, well, if you really believe this, you should leave the country.
That's right.
No, thanks. I'm going to stick around and fight for the truth. We'll be back in a moment. This is Kevin Barrett. I'm talking with David Ray Griffin right here on Truth Jihad Radio. Stick around.
Online and on demand, this is We the People Radio Network.
To Truth Jihad Radio, and it's new time slot right here on We the People Radio Network. I'm talking with David Griffin today. He's perhaps the most respected scholar in the 9/11 Truth Movement, and we're talking about 9/11 and Nationalist Faith, which is the title of a recent DVD of one of David's lectures. David, you've suggested in your lecture that Christian faith can be a sort of antidote to nationalist faith. And that if people are really putting their faith in God and in Christ, as Christianity suggests they should do, that this problem of unwillingness to entertain the possibility that our leaders are deeply corrupt would not arise.
Yes, and of course I was talking about Christian faith at its best, not as it's often exemplified, and certainly in our public life recently. It's... Also, what I'm talking about is a dimension of our tradition that we have in common with all the Abrahamic faiths. So it's not unique to Christianity, but Jewish and Muslim people have the same resource to draw on. And I talk about the tradition of just the old-fashioned term sin, and that we have a deep-seated tendency to sin, and of course sin takes many, many, many forms, but the most dangerous kinds in with regard to public officials is has to do with the question of power. And so it was a Roman Catholic thinker named Lord Acton who made the famous statement, power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And he didn't even put a tens in that last phrase, but just categorically, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And what have we done in this nation? We have been seeking absolute power, complete domination of the planet militarily. At one time, it was complete domination military and economically. We were falling behind on the economic, but these present administration has gone exclusively for military domination. Andrew Bacevich is a conservative who's a professor of international relations at Boston. And he argued this in his... book where he came out about American Empire, that's the title of the book, and his critique of American Empire, and said that our military has been seeking something approaching absolute power, absolute domination. This is he was referring to the doctrine of having domination in all four categories. That is the air, the land, the sea, and now space. So with that suspicion that our tradition should have inculcated in us, we should not be surprised that our leaders have become totally corrupt. When you have that kind of power, it's a very heady thing. And this idea of becoming the all-inclusive empire, the first global empire in history, the first one to dominate the whole world. And that's what they're talking about. Richard Perle was talking very explicitly about that. And we know he has been a central ideologue of this administration. And the neoconservatives in general have had that view. And so that's what I was suggesting there, that Christian faith, or more broadly, Abrahamic faith, we should realize that this can be, should be, and can be an antidote to this nationalism. And if you've got the DVD there, you see the cover with the dog on it with the blindfold made of the American flag.
Yeah, it's a wonderful drawing by Nathan James.
Yeah. He happened to send that to me just shortly before I gave that lecture. So they put that poster up. They made a poster of it and put it up while I was giving the lecture, which I was giving at the Iliff School of Theology in Denver. And it was very striking and very effective as people had that there in front of them all the time, realizing that this nationalist faith is one that can make us blind. And indeed, it has made us blind to the truth behind 9/11.
And interestingly, I think the Islamic faith has not blinded people so much as it hasn't inspired them to speak out about it. The polls suggest that 80% of the world's Muslims thought it was an inside job from day one, and that number really hasn't changed much ever since. And within the Islamic tradition, you know, we don't have the same tradition of original sin that Christianity has. The doctrine is that humans were born good, and what Christians think of as sin, Muslims think of as forgetfulness. But we do have this tradition of the ultimate bad guy, or sinner in Christian terms, in the Quran, is Pharaoh, who is corrupted by precisely his absolute power. So I think we're sort of on the same wavelength there, ultimately, even if we get there by a slightly different route, but we end up at about the same place.
That's right. Both traditions should make us very suspicious of leaders who have been seeking absolute power, something close to it, so that far from the a priori position being, oh, of course our leaders wouldn't do such a thing, the a priori position would be, well, of course they might do such a thing. Let's look at the evidence and see if they did. And that's the point that, the 9/11 Truth Movement is all about, trying to get people actually to look at the evidence. Because once they look at the evidence, the game is up.
You know, maybe we can help by invoking a new kind of I wouldn't call it a nationalist faith, but at least a return to some of the better principles in the mythological American heritage. And I'm talking about the revolution we fought against empire. That's what this country was born in, and it was also born in a belief in freedom and tolerance, religious tolerance, everything that's in the Bill of Rights. And, of course, that grows out of the Enlightenment, which is precisely what the neoconservatives have sworn to destroy. So maybe if we invoke this more skeptical kind of revolutionary American heritage, that can be sort of an antidote to the kind of blind religious faith theory or nationalism.
Well, that's right, and that was a revolution against the earlier King George.
That's right, yeah. This one, if anything, seems worse than the earlier one.
Oh, yes, he was the King George that we found intolerable was a piker when it comes to abuse and violation of what we would now call international law.
Right. Yeah, Alex Jones, you know, is always saying things like his ancestors, fought to put down these people who wanted to tyrannize them and so on and so forth. There's actually quite a lot of this tonic kind of American nationalistic talk that's moving us in the right direction, coming from the so-called patriot movement, the libertarian side of the spectrum, the Ron Paul supporters. And, you know, I've been trying to sort of bring that group together with the what Barry Zwicker calls the conscious left, to have a sort of an alliance of radical common sense politically. But what's your thought on that?
Well, I think so. And again, I want to come back to this question of evidence. I think that if we can get the conscious left to take a few minutes, I mean, you know, literally just a few hours to confront some of the evidence, they will come around. Bill Christensen illustrated this, and I quoted him in one of my recent books called Debunking 9/11, Debunking, which I'm pleased to see on Amazon is still doing quite well. He admitted in a letter to his friends that for about 5 years, he had deliberately avoided looking at 9/11. And finally, he did somehow bring himself to look at the evidence. And he said he went through 6 agonizing months and finally decided, yes, indeed, it's obviously an inside job.
And he made the brave decision to speak out about it in no uncertain terms. And you can find that quote at patriotsquestion911.com. We'll be back
exactly.
In a moment. Yeah, Kevin Barrett talking with David Ray Griffin, the author of a number of great books on 9/11. Truth Jihad Radio. I'm Kevin Barrett. Today I'm talking with David Ray Griffin, the Dean of 9/11 Studies himself. And David, before we get back into the discussion, I guess we can give out the call-in number. If anybody wants to say hello, the number here is area code 512-646-1984. That's 512-646-1984. David, one more thing I wanted to ask you about is in terms of the discussions and debates over various strands of evidence in 9/11. Within the 9/11 truth movement itself, there are, of course, different opinions on some of these issues. Paul Zaremka, who I had on yesterday, believes that the best hypothesis would be that there were actually some kind of hijackings on 9/11, perhaps remote control overrides on the planes. Others, such as yourself, have tended to think that the chance there's really no evidence that there were any hijackings, and that, you know, what evidence there is appears to have been manufactured. There are other disputes about relatively conventional versus relatively unconventional modes of demolition. And my colleague on the other network I'm on, Jim Fetzer, has recently gotten very excited about alleged video fakery. How do you think people in the 9/11 truth movement should deal with these kinds of controversies about evidence?
Well, I don't know, and you know, I don't like to censor people who are genuinely seeking the truth. I think we should focus in our public discussions primarily on those elements that can be established beyond any reasonable doubt. So let me pick up the question about Muslim hijackers on board. I'm in, of course, Paul Zaremka's book, and I'm very keen on the new paperback edition of it, Hidden History of 9/11. Mm-hmm. And I have my essay on the World Trade Center collapses in there, and these all have updates from the hardback edition. So there are many respects in which this soft paper, softback edition is much better. Not only the price.
Of all the price, yeah.
Price, about one-fourth of what the hardback costs, but also things are updated. And Jay Kolar has a fabulous essay in there on the hijackers.
He'll be on
and his updating really helps with that.
Right.
So let me focus a little bit on the, some things I talked about in my latest book, which is 9/11 Contradictions, reasons I think there were no Muslim hijackers. Because, you know, that's the basic issue, and I'm going to write an essay on this. Did Muslims attack America on 9/11? That's the question that, with the presidential debates coming up and probably a future President Obama, who is all keen on going to Afghanistan to get the people who really attacked us on 9/11.
Right. That's one step forward, two steps back, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, so we need to focus on this question. And so, you know, I raise in there, I've got separate chapters on all these things. One, of course, was, were the alleged hijackers devout Muslims who could be assumed to be ready to meet their maker and therefore have no problem with dying on 9/11? And, of course, we've got all sorts of evidence. They were anything but devout Muslims who drank, took cocaine, went to, had prostitutes, lap dances, all of that. Secondly, is there any hard evidence that Osama bin Laden was even involved in 9/11? And the answer is categorically no. And the FBI has now said this.
His chauffeur did it, right? It was actually the chauffeur.
And, you know, Cain and Hamilton, the co-chairs of the 9/11 Commission, have in effect said this because they've admitted that all the testimony they got that pointed to Osama bin Laden came from CIA investigations that they couldn't validate the honesty of, and that probably came from torture. And there's been a lot of discussion now that you can't trust statements that are extracted from torture because people will say almost anything to stop the torture. But let me go to my favorite story, which is the Otto went to Portland story. The chief evidence that was given that 9/11 was carried out by Al-Qaeda was provided by, they said, Otto's luggage that he had gone up to Portland, Maine the night before for some reason, rented a car, drove up there, blue Nissan, stayed overnight, flew back down the next morning, made the flight with no trouble, but for some reason his luggage didn't make it. So after the towers were hit, somebody noticed, hey, there's a Muhammad Otto's luggage, let's look in there. And they found all this incriminating evidence that proved it was Al-Qaeda.
Some of it extremely dubious, I might add, such as the last will and testament beginning with the name of God, myself, and my family, which is utterly blasphemous to any actual Arabic-speaking Muslim, but continue.
That's right, that's right. And but nevertheless, this was the official story, and this was the proof that it was Muslim Al-Qaeda hijackers. But if you go back to September 12th and see what the story was, it was completely different. They found this treasure trove of information in a white Mitsubishi that was parked in the Logan Airport at Boston. There was nothing about Otto going to Portland. There were two other guys who went to Portland. Their name was Bukhari. They drove the blue Nissan up there. They stayed overnight. They flew back the next morning. But then by Wednesday, they found out these guys didn't die on 9/11. One had died the year before, and the other one's still alive. So they just changed the story. And so suddenly it became Muhammad Atta went to Portland, and instead of the treasure trove of information being found in a white Mitsubishi, he had driven the blue Nissan to Portland, flew back down, and then it was found in his luggage inside the Portland airport. Well, when you got a story changing like that, you can be pretty sure the story wasn't true in the first place.
And the many, many, many other contradictions in the official portrait of the alleged hijackers and their deed will be discussed in the second hour of today's show when I will be bringing on Jay Kolar himself, who's an excellent essay.
Oh, good. I didn't know I was giving a plug
right
for
you.
Jay. Well, that's great.
Yeah, so that's a good lead-in. So, listen, we do have a caller on the line. It's Mike from New Orleans. Welcome, Mike. How are you?
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I just wanted to thank Dr. Griffin for everything he's done. I found a lot of his information to be very informative and very helpful in trying to spread the truth out there, you know. So I just wanted to say that, you know. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you very much for calling in.
Yeah, thanks, Mike.
Definitely an honor to talk to you. So, well, you know, we're out here banging, you know, shaking the bushes and trying to wake the people up. You know, I've been back and forth from the West Coast to East Coast, really. And, you know, at first, 3-4 years ago, it was like kicking a dead stick. It was like, you know, people look at you like you're crazy and it costs you everything, which it cost me everything. It cost me literally everything. But I wouldn't have it any other way because it's really rewarding and validating to go out in public now and talk to people, and they don't look at you like you're crazy anymore. They pick up that ear, and they're like, hey, wait a minute, you know, there's some truth to this.
That's right. There is a lot more receptivity to it than there was just 2 years ago. So we're definitely making real progress.
Yes, they are waking up. People are waking up and you know, starting to smell the treason, I guess. But I was at the Dallas convention for the Reform Party this past weekend, and I don't think America's really aware that you do have another presidential candidate. And out of respect for the radio show, I won't say anything unless that's okay with you guys.
No, it's fine with me. Go ahead. Okay. This is free speech land here.
His name is Mr. Ted Wheel. He won the nomination the weekend of the 18th, 19th with a court-ordered convention with the parliamentary officer, the whole bit. I'm not really a politician. I'm a musician.
Okay, but is he a 9/11 truther?
You know, I can't speculate or speak for the man, but it's my opinion that, yeah, he's aware of some problems. Let's put it that way.
Well, I think he should speak out because as it is right now, you know, I'm running for Congress as a Libertarian, and Bob Barr, the presidential candidate, won't go near 9/11, so I'm going to have to vote for Cynthia McKinney, and I'm telling everybody that. So if people want my vote and the votes of the other, anywhere from, you know, 10% of my hoppers to 40% lie hoppers in the American population, they're going to have to speak out and say something about this.
Right. Well, you know, I don't know exactly what he has done or hasn't done at this point. I just know that I was at the convention and he was nominated. I did have a lot of time with the man, and it was a really great honor to spend this time with him. You know, of course, we had some thugs come in and try to bust it up and all this, but what they didn't realize is that this was court-ordered with a parliamentary officer assigned. So
all right. Well, you know, that's pretty interesting. So we do have a lot of alternative candidates. David, what are your thoughts of the candidates in the presidential election?
I like Mr. Ted. I'm a big Ron Paul supporter, but I really like Mr. Ted for the fact that he's just a hard-working guy. He's a machinist. He's an 84-year-old man. He's married to a half Zuni Indian.
Okay, David, well, I wanted to get David Griffin's opinion here before we have to leave him.
Well, it sounds like you're playing me off here. My main focus is whoever becomes, I want to get the truth about 9/11 out.
Exactly.
So that we won't continue these insane policies.
Okay, right. Amen to that. Thank you, David, for a great show, and keep up the terrific work. We're all cheering for you.
Okay, Kevin, thank you.
Take care.
Pleasure, David.
All right, David Ray Griffin, Dean of 9/11 Studies, one of my heroes. And next hour, we'll be bringing on Jay Kolar to talk about the alleged hijackers. So stay tuned.